John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent on the morning show on Wisconsin Public Radio. President Donald Trump carried the state of Wisconsin by 23,000 votes during last year's election. However, our guest this hour argues that while the election may be over, the impact of Wisconsin's voter ID law went underreported, even though it played a vital role in the 2016 presidential election outcome. He discusses the ways in which Wisconsinites were directly affected by voter ID, the demographic profile of those disenfranchised by it, and how voter suppression contributes to unjust elections across the nation. So what are your thoughts on voter ID in Wisconsin? Were you or someone you know directly impacted by it? Do you think the voter ID law is good for the state, and does it actually prevent voter fraud? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org. You can post to the Ideas Network Facebook page or tweet us at WPR Mornings. My guest is Ari Berman, senior reporter at Mother Jones, covering voting rights. He recently wrote the piece, Rigged, How Voter Suppression Threw Wisconsin to Trump. He is a fellow at the Nation Institute and author of the books, Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America, and Herding Donkeys, The Fight to Rebuild the Democratic Party and Reshape American Politics. Ari Berman, welcome to the morning show. Okay, I don't hear Ari. Oh, there you are.
Can you hear me, Don?
Yes, I can hear you now. Ari Berman, welcome to the morning show. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. I've been on the line for 7 minutes. I was a little concerned that something happened.
Okay, no, we're here. Okay, the title of your piece is Rigged. Explain what you mean by rigged.
So my piece looked at the impact of Wisconsin's voter ID law on the 2016 election. In 2011, Wisconsin, as you know, passed one of the strictest voter ID laws in the country, meaning you had to have a Wisconsin driver's license or certain forms of Wisconsin photo ID to be able to vote. A federal court found that 300,000 registered voters, which was 9% of the electorate, did not have those forms of ID when the law passed. This law was blocked in court for a period of time, but it was reinstated for the 2016 election. And I found that the law had a bigger impact than a lot of people realized. And I found that from talking to voters, from talking to election officials, like the head of elections in Milwaukee, and also looking at various data points, including a study from the University of Wisconsin, the University of Madison, which found that they surveyed registered voters who didn't vote in the 2016 election. They asked them why. And 1 in 10 people who didn't vote in the 2016 election said the voter ID law was a reason or the reason they didn't vote. And that meant that up to 23,000 people were blocked or deterred from voting in Dane and Milwaukee alone. And Donald Trump only won the state by 22,700 votes. And I say very clearly in the piece, there was no one factor that swung Wisconsin or the election. There was the weakness of Hillary Clinton. There was Russian interference in the election. There was Jim Comey's intervention. There was racism. There was sexism. There was a struggling economy. There were so many different factors. But what I also say is that I think that laws like Wisconsin's voter ID law had a bigger impact than we realize. So I wanted to write this story to bring attention to the voter disenfranchisement that I think occurred, because I think if we don't address this problem now, it's going to get worse in future elections.
Well, you've kind of talked about this a little bit, but you've been diving into voting fraud in last year's election for quite some time now, and this time, though, you decided to focus on the state of Wisconsin. So that raises a couple of issues. First of all, what's new? I mean, the election is over. Why are we still talking about this?
Well, the thing is we didn't really talk about voting rights during the election, so that's why I wanted to write about it. If you look at the debates, which is just one data point, but I think a very significant data point, there were 25 debates during the primary and general election, and there wasn't a single question about laws like Wisconsin's voter ID law. We also were in a situation where in 2013 the Supreme Court ruled that states with the longest histories of discrimination no longer had to approve their voting changes with the federal government. That meant that the 2016 election was the first presidential election in 50 years without the full protections of the Voting Rights Act. I think that should have been talked more about. That meant that southern states with a long history of discrimination had new voting restrictions in effect, and also northern states like Wisconsin that didn't have the same history of voting discrimination had new restrictions in effect. And I think Wisconsin is a very important state for voting rights because, as you know, John, it's a state with a very long history of high turnout, a very high history of civic participation. And so when voter disenfranchisement occurs in Wisconsin, which is supposed to be a national leader on voting rights, I think that has national significance as well.
Voter ID law for our listeners who may not be familiar with it. You kind of touched on a few things before, but what is it that makes this so restrictive? I mean, people would argue that, well, okay, having an ID to vote shouldn't be an issue. I mean, you know, why should that stop people from voting? What is it about this law that you find so troubling?
Well, so 85% to 90% of the public does have the required forms of ID, but for the 10% of the public that doesn't, it can be very restrictive. And if you look at who doesn't possess these IDs, it hurts certain groups more than others. So, for example, a federal court found that African Americans in Wisconsin were 50% more likely than whites to not have these strict forms of government-issued ID that were required, because African Americans in Wisconsin were more likely to live in poverty, more likely to live in urban areas where they didn't drive, more likely to move to Wisconsin from other states like Illinois, where their Illinois IDs were not accepted to vote. It also impacted college students more than others because college IDs from most places were not accepted because of the criteria. So only 3 of 13 schools, the 4-year schools in the University of Wisconsin system, had IDs that were accepted, meaning those schools, including the University of Wisconsin-Madison, had to print completely separate IDs for students to use to vote, which is an expensive, confusing, and a restrictive process for a lot of students to have to go through. So I'm not saying everyone was impacted by this law. I think the majority of your listeners, the majority of people in your state absolutely will have this ID. What I'm saying is that a large enough number don't have the ID to impact an election. And not only that, but there can be a very big impact on people who don't have one, because I told a lot of stories of voters who weren't able to vote or weren't able to get the IDs they needed when they went to the DMV. And for them, it was a really big issue.
Would you say that Wisconsinites were informed, or as informed as they should have been, about our voter ID law?
No, they weren't, because the legislature initially gave money for voter ID advertising. Then the law was blocked in court for a long time, so there was no voter ID law in Wisconsin. Then it was reinstated. But the ad campaign about the voter ID law didn't begin until June of 2016, so just a few months before the election. And Wisconsin ran ads about the voter ID law in 52 movie theaters across the state. But there wasn't a single ad about the voter ID law in Milwaukee, where 70% of African Americans in the state of Wisconsin live and where the voter ID law had the biggest impact. And as the head of elections there told me, how many people in poverty who are most impacted by this law go to the movies in the first place? I also know that there were big problems with the DMV and their knowledge about the law. So I told a story in the piece of a 34-year-old African-American man named Zach Moore who moved from Chicago to Madison. And in September 2016, he went to the DMV to try to get a Wisconsin ID to vote. And he was someone who had a job but then lost his job, broke his leg, was homeless. But he went to the DMV, and he had his Illinois photo ID, he had his Social Security card, and he had proof of Wisconsin residency. There was a big sign at the DMV that said, no birth certificate, no problem, meaning if you didn't have your birth certificate, you could still get a Wisconsin ID to be able to vote. And so he went up to the counter, he brought all his documents, he said, I want to get a Wisconsin ID to vote. And they said, you need to get your birth certificate. He said, well, I have everything else. I don't have my birth certificate. They said, you have to go back to Illinois, get your birth certificate, and come back here, or else it's going to take 6 to 8 weeks for you to get a Wisconsin ID to vote, at which point the election would have been over because it was late September 2016. So there was a big sign right at the DMV that said no birth certificate, no problem. Yet the people at the DMV were telling this one guy, you need to have a birth certificate to get your ID to vote. And this was happening all across the state of Wisconsin. And I'm not saying this was necessarily malicious. I think the DMV workers wanted to help. But clearly there was a failure of miscommunication at the very highest levels in terms of how this law was supposed to work and how the process to obtain IDs were supposed to work, because the judge in Wisconsin said after this came out that the process for issuing IDs in Wisconsin was a, quote, wretched failure. And he said, undeniably, people have been disenfranchised.
We are going to take a break for news, and then we'll come back and have more of our conversation with Ari Berman, a senior reporter at Mother Jones Magazine covering voting rights. Wondering what you think? You can let us know at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Do you have a story about being affected by Wisconsin's voter ID law? Do you think it's a good idea? Do you think it impacted the last election, and how so? 800-642-1234. John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent on the Ideas Network. This hour, we're talking about the impact of Wisconsin's voter ID law on the 2016 election. My guest is Ari Berman, senior reporter at Mother Jones Magazine covering voting rights. He recently wrote the piece, Rigged, How Voter Suppression Threw Wisconsin to Trump. 800-642-1234 is the number to call to join the program. A number of people are on the line, and let's take a few phone calls. We'll start in Sheboygan, where Chad is with us. Chad, good morning.
Good morning. Nice to talk to you guys. First of all, Mr. Berman, I'm a big fan of your work. We subscribe to The Nation, The Progressive, and Mother Jones, and I'd just like to encourage everybody listening to go find nonprofit journalism. It's the most important source of news I think we can get. The first thing I wanted to point out is that voter fraud is not a problem statistically, so we don't need these voter ID laws ever. That's the very first thing that we should scream loud and clear, that this is not a problem. And, of course, the system's got to be fixed, but that's the first and foremost point that we got to make. I'll take my comments off the air. Thanks, guys.
Ari Berman?
Well, first off, I want to thank Chad for subscribing to all of those progressive magazines, including Mother Jones, where I currently work, and thank you for the kind words. I think Chad makes a very important point. Wisconsin didn't present a single case of voter impersonation in court that the voter ID law would have stopped. Voter ID only stops one kind of voter fraud, the kind of voter fraud where you show up in person and you try to impersonate another voter at the polls, which is exceedingly rare. It's also a pretty stupid way, quite honestly, to try to steal an election. If you impersonate another voter, you're more than likely going to get caught. You're going to face a felony, you're going to face a fine, potentially time in jail, and you're only going to swing one extra vote. And doing it on the scale that would tip a close election is probably not going to happen. So I'm not saying that voter fraud never occurs. I don't think anyone would argue that, but I think it occurs in much smaller numbers than a lot of people realize, and I think voter impersonation in particular occurs very, very rarely. And it was interesting that when this law initially went to a federal court, they found zero cases of voter impersonation, but they found 300,000 registered voters at the time who didn't have strict forms of ID. And the judge in that case said very clearly that the law was going to block many more legitimate eligible voters than cases of fraud that it would stop.
Well, I mean, Republicans argued that as this law was being debated in the state, that it's necessary to prevent voter fraud. And they talked a lot about how voter fraud was a problem in Milwaukee. Let's talk a little bit about the state's history and challenges around this issue of voter fraud. We say it's rare, the statistically, that you don't, there really just aren't any cases of it. But why is this still an issue?
Well, there were very few confirmed cases of voter fraud in past Wisconsin elections. There was a lot of rhetoric about fraud, and Republicans made a lot of accusations about voter fraud in Milwaukee, particularly in the 2000 and 2004 election. But there wasn't a whole lot of actual evidence when people investigated. It was mostly people who were former felons who thought they were eligible to vote and were not, and it was not the kind of thing that a voter ID law would have even stopped in the first place. So there was very little evidence of voter fraud in past Wisconsin elections, and pretty much every expert in Wisconsin testified about that, whether it was the head of the Government Accountability Board at the time or experts that looked into this. They said that voter fraud was a very small problem in American elections. I think so many people believed it was happening because Scott Walker and other very prominent Republicans in the state kept saying it was happening, but the evidence told a very different story.
Let's take another phone call. This time we'll go to Waukesha, where Ben is with us. Ben, good morning. Thanks for joining us on the morning show.
Good morning. I just want to give a little background of my experience in the voting process. I've been a poll watcher for the last 16 years, and I can tell you that just from the compassion that the people in the voting registration process exercise is rather touching. It's really a neat process to be there. I can also tell you that I have never seen a situation where a voter was denied or not given an opportunity. You know, they've been even given, I've seen two situations where somebody was given a provisional ballot because they didn't have the appropriate ID and everything. But I can also tell you from being a poll watcher, I can watch the process in which the voter registration had been, call it farmed, to get people to come into polling locations, especially in the inner city. When you'd see all of a sudden a bus come through with a whole bunch of people, and when you started looking at IDs and registration information and asking questions, I had a couple people turn around and leave. And so I ask you, from your experience firsthand, what have you observed versus, I've heard some secondhand anecdotal, but what were the interviews that you've conducted that showed truly there was something that went wrong? And after doing it 16 years, I can tell you with some certainty that I've been finding the process a very humbling and high integrity process to a great degree.
Ben, thanks for the call. Ari Berman, Ben mentioned a provisional ballot. One of the examples in your piece for Mother Jones was about somebody who ran into exactly that. And why don't you tell her story? Because I think that responds nicely to what Ben was talking about.
Yeah, well, I want to thank Ben for being a poll worker. I think it's always great when people volunteer to get more involved with our elections. So I talk about a woman named Andrea Anthony from Milwaukee in my piece. She was a 37-year-old African-American woman, and she lost her driver's license a few days before the election. So she lost the ID she needed to vote. But she went to her polling place in Milwaukee with an expired Wisconsin ID to confirm who she was, proof of residency to show that she was a Wisconsin resident. She was already registered to vote. She had voted at her polling place during the April primary in Wisconsin, so everyone knew who she was. But she wasn't able to cast a regular ballot because she didn't have her driver's license. Well, to have her provisional ballot counted, she would have had to go to the DMV and then to the Board of Elections to have her ballot counted within 72 hours after the election. And she was not able to do that because she was working full-time and also taking care of five children. And what we saw from the data is that hundreds of voters had to cast provisional ballots because of ID issues, and very few of those ballots ended up being counted because people were not able to get an ID and then have their ballot counted within 72 hours after the election. So this was hard evidence of people being disenfranchised by the law. And you could say, well, oh, they should have had an ID and all of that other stuff, but the fact is people showed up to vote who didn't have the ID, who had voted in previous elections, and the vast majority of them didn't have their ballots counted. And I think there are less restrictive ways that we can verify who people are that will not disenfranchise them. And I actually think the system was working pretty well in previous elections in Wisconsin. I think there was a lot more controversy about this election because of the voter ID law than in previous elections in the state.
We have some people who've been posting about this issue on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Brandy writes, not just the voter ID laws, which are terrible in themselves, but it's also the gerrymandering. I did vote in the last election. However, I don't see a point in voting anymore. It feels like my vote doesn't even matter. Do we are we seeing some fatigue on the part of the electorate that could also be contributing to people not voting?
Well, Well, gerrymandering in Wisconsin is a huge issue. I was at the Supreme Court recently where the Supreme Court heard a challenge to Wisconsin's legislative maps that were redrawn after the 2010 election. Wisconsin, according to experts, has some of the most gerrymandered maps in the country. You have a situation in 2012 where Democrats got more votes in the election, but Republicans got many more seats. So the maps are basically designed to give Republicans, both in the congressional delegation, but even more so the legislature, a huge majority. And I think it's created a situation where Wisconsin, even though it's a swing state, has very few competitive seats in the legislature. Most seats are solidly Republican or solidly Democratic, and a lot of people don't think that gives them an incentive to vote. So I think that's another way in which voting rights have been restricted. I also say in my piece that there have been 33 different ways in which a democracy has been undermined in Wisconsin under Governor Walker. And if you look at election laws alone, it wasn't just the voter ID law. The state cut back early voting in terms of hours and locations. They eliminated special registration deputies that were able to register people at high schools and other places. They made it harder to count absentee ballots. They required new information to be able to register to vote. They tightened residency law. So there were all sorts of changes that went largely below the radar, but impacted thousands of people in terms of their rights to vote. And so it's just really interesting to me that Wisconsin has been the state that's historically had very high voter turnout and very high faith in the integrity of elections in this state. But recently, it's gone down a very different path in terms of changing its election laws, in my view, for partisan reasons.
Here's another Facebook comment. This one comes from Buzz, who writes, "While I don't think a voter ID should be necessary, how many folks navigate life with really no form of ID, from using the library to social services, and how many of those vote? About 35% of eligible voters didn't vote in the last presidential election. What number of those were actively denied the chance?"
So it's interesting. Everyone I talk to had ID. All of the voters who couldn't vote had ID, but they didn't have the right ID, and I think that's really important to note. So, for example, in Wisconsin, you have to have a Wisconsin driver's license or state ID to be able to vote, meaning that if you have moved from Illinois, your Illinois driver's license, which will get you on a plane and will allow you to buy alcohol and allow you to buy Sudafed and check out a book, you cannot use that to be able to vote. At the same time, your University of Wisconsin ID is not going to be able to be used to vote in most places, even though you can show that ID for a whole number of things in life. And so I think it's not a question of having ID, it's a question of having the quote-unquote right ID. And I talked to people that wanted to vote, that were excited to vote, but didn't have the right documents. And so certainly there were a lot of people that sat out the election for one reason or another who had no problems with ID and no problems voting, and they just didn't like the candidates for one reason or another. But there were people that wanted to vote but couldn't because of ID and other issues. And I think that part of the story had been totally lost during the last election.
All right, let's take another phone call. This time we'll go to Oconto, and Tim is with us. Tim, good morning.
Good morning. Just my question is, when did it become the responsibility of the government to coddle and to just remove any responsibility whatsoever from the voter? I mean, growing up, you know, I would go and I would register to vote, and I would get the ID, and I would inform myself, and I would drive myself to the polling place during regular polling hours. Now it just seems like there's so much. It's, you know, you can vote anytime you want, and you can vote anywhere you want, and people will register you without an ID, and they'll bring you on a bus, and they'll tell you how to vote, and there's no personal responsibility from the voter themselves.
Tim, thanks so much for the call. Ari Berman?
Well, I think that if a state passes a new restriction on voting that a federal court finds that hundreds of thousands of people can't comply with, I think the state has a responsibility to make sure that people have the documents they need. A lot of other countries run elections very differently. So a lot of other countries, the first thing they do is they automatically register everyone who's eligible to vote. So you don't have to go out and register. You're automatically registered. And secondarily, in countries that require ID, everyone is sent an ID. Therefore, there are not these battles over voter ID because everyone has an ID. But in states like Wisconsin, it's very different, that the onus is on the voter to get one. And in most cases, people don't have a problem. But in cases that I've described, people do have a problem where they go to the DMV and they don't have their birth certificate. So their application for an ID is rejected. Or they misplace their documents and their backup documents are not required. Or they move from another state and they can't get their ID in time before the election because their previous ID is not accepted. Or they go to a college and they don't know that they have to get a completely separate ID to be able to vote. So these are cases in which people are disenfranchised. And I think if the state made more of an effort to get IDs in the hands of people who need them, we wouldn't have had these problems. But Wisconsin clearly didn't make this effort because people were being denied IDs in the federal courts. We're specifically saying that Wisconsin's process for issuing IDs, in the court's words, was a wretched failure.
Tim, thanks for the call. Let's go next to Barry, who's calling us from Spooner. Barry, good morning. Thanks for joining us on the morning show.
Good morning. Excuse me. I wanted the guest to keep addressing out-of-state driver's license and university IDs, both of which do not show residency of Wisconsin. And additionally, if you have an Illinois license and you move to Wisconsin, you have a short period to obtain a Wisconsin driver's license, and the Illinois license becomes invalid and therefore isn't even a valid ID. So you keep saying that they don't work, but that's because they're not valid for residency.
Ari Berman?
Well, you have to have proof of residency to register to vote in Wisconsin regardless. So, I mean, it doesn't really matter because those documents are not used to register you to vote anyway. So if you want to register in Wisconsin, you still have to have some sort of proof of residency. So someone who showed up with an Illinois ID would have to have proof of Wisconsin residency to register to vote regardless. Same with a university ID. And so I think there are states that have much less restrictive voter ID laws that allow out-of-state IDs, that allow college IDs, that allow other forms of ID like government IDs, which are not accepted in Wisconsin, and fewer people are disenfranchised as a result.
Well, I think there may be a little confusion here because this is a two-part thing. First of all,
yeah,
you have to prove that you are who you say you are. And the second thing is you have to prove where you live. And I'll give you an example. Wisconsin does not require you to get a new driver's license if you change addresses. You only have to get a new license when your old one expires. And my driver's license is two addresses ago because we have a long long period between driver's license renewals. And so when I went to vote, I had to prove that I actually lived at the place where I live, and I used a separate document for that. In this case, it was a utility bill. So, I mean, it's a two-part ID process. One says you are who you say you are, and the other is this is where you live because we need to know that so you vote in the correct district. Where do we get hung up here? Which part of this is the real problem?
Well, I mean, people get hung up on both parts of it, quite honestly. There are people that have unstable living situations, if they're moving a lot or if they're homeless, that can't provide proof of Wisconsin residency to be able to register to vote in the first place. So some people are hung up there. But I think a greater number of people are hung up on the ID question because they have IDs from other states or from universities or IDs that are expired that they can't use to vote, even if they're registered to vote. So many of the people that I talked to who weren't able to vote in the last election were, in fact, registered in Wisconsin and had proof of residency, and they still weren't able to vote. So even though they were able to confirm who they were and where they lived, they still weren't able to vote because they didn't have that additional step of having the right ID.
Barry, thanks for the call. We're going to take a break for some news coming up in just about 30 seconds, and then we'll be back with more with our guest, Ari Berman, senior reporter at Mother Jones. We're talking about Wisconsin's voter ID law and how it impacted the 2016 election. John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll be right back. This hour, we're talking about voter suppression in Wisconsin and its impact on the last election. Ari Berman is senior reporter at Mother Jones covering voting rights. The article that he wrote that triggered this particular program is titled Rigged: How Voter Suppression Threw Wisconsin to Trump. 800-642-1234, the number to call. And we have full phones right now, so let's take a call. We'll go to Slinger, where Jacqueline is on the line. Jacqueline, good morning.
Yes, good morning. My concern is through the various suppression methods and voter purging off the rolls and gerrymandering. Right now in the United States, and we see it particularly played out in Wisconsin, is minority representation of the majority. And we're also seeing a split of rural versus urban, where a majority of voters live in urban areas. We are being governed by the rural areas. And through these methods that the Republican Party are using, is going to lead to conflict where people are not going to continue to put up with minority governance of the majority.
Ari Berman?
Well, if you look at, I think the caller makes a good point, because if you look at the redistricting maps that were passed by Republicans in 2012, Republicans in the Wisconsin legislature did get fewer votes than Democrats, but they got dramatically more seats. In 2016, they got slightly more votes than Democrats, but many more seats. And so you have a situation where the kind of notion of one person, one vote that we grew up with is not really translating, because people are getting fewer votes or maybe sometimes slightly more votes, but getting dramatically more seats in the legislature. And then I think at the same time, you know, people are showing up and their votes aren't being counted. And so I think people are losing faith in the democratic process because of this. We always hear about how, well, people have lost faith in the democratic process because of the widespread voter fraud, which is the argument for voter ID laws in the first place, even though there is no evidence of the kind of widespread fraud that a voter ID law would stop. I think that it's much more likely that people are losing faith in the democratic process because they believe wrongly that their vote doesn't matter, their vote doesn't count. And you look at elections in Wisconsin, and they're decided by such small margins that you really see the power of someone's vote. But at the same time, people are losing faith in the democratic process and wondering why bother. And gerrymandering and new restrictions on voting are contributing to that sense of alienation from the democratic process.
Well, but I want to touch on something that our caller just mentioned, and that is the rural-urban split, because that's been here for a lot longer than voter ID. And as someone who grew up in the rural parts of northern Wisconsin, I can tell you that there is a great deal of resentment toward some of the large urban areas, which it's been assumed have been the ones that have been running the state. So, you know, I mean, that's another whole issue that we could probably spend another hour talking just about that.
We could, and I think the voter ID law had a particular impact in those urban areas, particularly in Milwaukee, where 70% of the state's African American population lives, and in a situation where half of something like a third of African Americans in Milwaukee also are below the poverty line, so race and class mixed in Milwaukee, where they had a harder problem with the ID law than other parts of the state. And it's interesting, there was a federal trial in Wisconsin last year about the voter ID law, and a former aide to Dale Schultz, who was a longtime moderate Republican in the legislature, said that Republican legislators talked behind closed doors about the fact that the voter ID law would, in his words, target, quote, neighborhoods around Milwaukee and college campuses around the state. So I think some Republicans were focused on the voter ID law having a particular impact in certain areas, and particularly more in urban areas and in Milwaukee than in more rural areas.
Where people were more likely to vote for Democratic candidates.
Yes, yes.
Let's. We've got a lot more calls here. Jacqueline, thanks for your call. Let's go to Scott next, who's calling us from Whitewater. Scott, thanks for joining us.
Good morning. My first couple comments is, when it comes to early voting, I am one of the individuals who thinks that as soon as the ballot is finalized and printed, that voting should begin then, and election day is the deadline in the number to cast your ballot. And then number two, when it comes to voter ID, again, I support voter ID, and my argument is that in the state of Wisconsin, the state gives free IDs specifically for the purpose of voting, to people who need them, whatever, and they just have to bring in the proper forms of ID or identification or whatever to prove who they are. And those free voter IDs are available at any DMV location around the state. And it's just take a case in point, whatever. When they were doing the construction work for the new Bucks Arena, and they had targeted workers in the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County, one of the requirements to get one of those jobs was that the people had to show up with a valid Wisconsin driver's license, Wisconsin valid ID. So the people who make the argument that regarding voter ID go completely contrary to their points when it comes to jobs programs.
Scott, thanks for the call. How Wisconsin does offer free IDs for the purpose of voting. You don't have to pay for them. What's problematic about the system?
What's problematic is that a lot of people who tried to get these free IDs were not able to get them because they didn't have underlying documents to get the ID. So I said how the DMV advertised that if you didn't have a birth certificate, which many people don't have or don't have readily available to them, you could still get a Wisconsin ID to vote. But people were showing up at the DMV with many of their documents but not having a birth certificate, and they were not getting the IDs they needed, or they were not getting the IDs they needed in a quick period of time before the election. And that's why a federal judge ordered an investigation into how Wisconsin was issuing the IDs, and they said there was a huge failure in terms of training the DMV properly, in terms of educating the public about these laws, that many people were confused about the kind of ID they needed, and not only that, but people were not being issued the IDs in the way the state of Wisconsin was advertising. So Wisconsin was saying one thing, which is that IDs are readily available, everyone who wants one can get one, and then people were showing up at the DMVs and having a very different experience and being denied their IDs. And I would also say that while you need an ID to vote, to do many things in life, getting a job at the Milwaukee Bucks Stadium is not a fundamental right like voting is. And so I think we need to be a little bit more sensitive about voting. And not only that, but the fact that people have been historically disenfranchised in this country for many, many years.
Joe writes on Facebook, everyone in the state had 3 years to get a legal ID to vote. And he asks, why shouldn't we be required to show them?
Well, in fact, that's not really the case because the law didn't go back into effect until the 2016 election. So people really only had less than a year to get one. And not only that, but we saw over and over that people who wanted to get an ID and tried to get an ID were not able to, or only were able to with great difficulty. So I think that Wisconsin elections were working perfectly well before this voter ID law. I don't think there was any evidence of the kind of widespread voter fraud that necessitated voter ID. I think there's less restrictive ways to verify who people are than requiring just a Wisconsin driver's license or state ID. And I think the evidence is pretty clear that people were disenfranchised based by this law, based on a testimony in federal court, based on my own reporting, talking to voters who didn't have ID, based on a University of Wisconsin study that found that up to tens of thousands of people may have been prevented from voting by this law in Dane County and Milwaukee alone. And so I think there's lots of different data points showing that people were disenfranchised by this law. It's not, at this point, it's moved from a theory to a fact that people were disenfranchised. And we can talk about whether they should have been disenfranchised and whether they should have been able to get the right ID, but I don't think anyone can argue now statistically with the fact that people were disenfranchised.
Let's take another call here. Lori wants to join us from Vernon County. Lori, thanks for being here this morning.
Yes, good morning. I called to make sure that you talked about Senator Schultz's experience with Senator Grossman. I think what I'm calling from rural Wisconsin, what we have to talk about is the racism out here, that we don't care, or many people out here don't care, that black people in Milwaukee, the most segregated city in the United States, where the poorest black kids live, where we send more people to prison from that community, we don't care out here that they are being disenfranchised. And all of the talk about how, you know, difficult it is for people to get this ID in the city, people don't, it's racism, and that's what we have to start talking about. Thank you.
Okay. Ari Berman, a call from rural Wisconsin. Let's talk about the racial aspects of this. We've kind of alluded to it, but we're just about out of time. But what is going on here?
there was a huge racial aspect to the voter ID law. African Americans were more likely to not have the IDs than whites. Members of the legislature, Republican members of the legislature, made comments about trying to disenfranchise minority communities in Wisconsin. There is, I believe, a mistaken belief among many Republicans that widespread voter fraud among African Americans in Wisconsin in Milwaukee cost them past elections. And one thing that I was really struck by not being from Wisconsin was just the role that Milwaukee plays in Wisconsin politics, how demonized the city of Milwaukee is by people like Governor Scott Walker, people who are from either the Republican suburbs of Milwaukee, which are very white, or from other parts of the state. And so I think there's a big white-black Democratic urban Republican Democrat divide in Wisconsin. I think the consequence of that was that when voter turnout dropped in Wisconsin in 2016, nearly half the drop of turnout occurred in the city of Milwaukee, which was heavily Democratic and heavily African American. And the head of elections in Milwaukee, who is white, told me that he believes the law had the biggest impact among low-income African American voters in Milwaukee. And he thinks that the decline in turnout was due in part to the voter ID law, and he believes that that helped change the outcome of the election in Wisconsin. So the impact of the voter ID law absolutely fell more on African Americans and more on places like Milwaukee than other parts of the state.
We've got just under a minute left. What final message, Ari Berman, would you like to leave with our listeners about voter ID and voter suppression?
I would like to leave is that Wisconsin has been a national leader in voting rights. It's been a state that many people look to as an example of how to do voting right with high turnout, high participation, and now it's moving in a different kind of direction. It's moving in a direction where people are being disenfranchised, where there are very fierce battles over who should and shouldn't participate, and that worries me nationally, but it worries me particularly that it's happening in a state like Wisconsin. I think Wisconsin is moving from a state that's been a leader in voting rights to a state that's now regarded by many people as an Alabama, a North Carolina, a Mississippi, where there are very fierce clashes over voting and where people are becoming okay with voter disenfranchisement. And so I think Wisconsin should be very concerned about what's happening to their state when it comes to voting. I don't think Wisconsin should move from a leader in voting rights to a state with all of these problems. I think there are better ways to do this so Wisconsin can once again be viewed as a leader in this country.
All right. Ari Berman, thank you very much for joining me this morning.
Thanks so much, John. I really appreciate it.
Ari Berman, senior reporter at Mother Jones, covering voting rights. He recently wrote the piece Rigged, How Voter Suppression Threw Wisconsin to Trump, and he's also the author of several books on politics. The Morning Show is produced by Niaja Ellison. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. Coming up this time on Monday, it's our State Capitol Report. We'll get the latest with Lincoln Hills and other top state news. John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network of WPR.